From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. The Christian nationalist movement is growing in America. Its schools can be found all across the country. There are YouTube channels devoted to this idea. Some church leaders have extreme views, including that women are subordinate to men and only Christians can hold public office. Now, one of the centers of the movement is Christ Church in Moscow, Idaho, where the church is hoping to make the city a church town by buying up prime real estate and opening businesses there. Heath Druzin, the host and creator of the podcast, Extremely American, wanted to take a deep dive into this topic in season two of his podcast. And our own James Dawson joined him as they spent a year inside the Christian nationalist movement. Their podcast drops soon, and we are lucky enough to have them joining us to give us a preview of this. I want to welcome both of you to the show. Thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be here, Gemma.
Thanks, Gemma.
So Heath, let me start with you. For people who maybe haven't heard the first season of Extremely American, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, in the first season, we looked at militias and other far-right groups. And we were looking at them because they kind of went from fringe to more mainstream in recent years. And we were looking at the intersection of these far-right movements and mainstream politics and how they were kind of influencing politics, especially in a state like Idaho, and bringing them even more far-right. So in season one, spent a lot of time with different militia leaders, as well as the mm-hmm. folks who are opposing them, and talked a little bit about the influence that they're having on America more broadly.
So Heath, what was the response like to season one? Because I heard that the January 6th committee even wanted a briefing.
Yeah. So we got a great response. We got a lot of folks listening. We got about 300,000 downloads, which definitely exceeded my expectations. And apparently folks in DC were listening, because the January 6th committee did give me a call. They were looking for a background briefing, and it didn't quite work out because I wanted it to be a public briefing, or I wanted it to at least have the transcript be public, just so there was no, you know, there was no mystery about it.
Right.
People weren't like, "Huh, he's talking to the government. Well, what's going on? What's he like? Is he giving up secrets?" I just wanted to be transparent. We weren't quite able to get to, we weren't able to get on the same page about that. So I ended up declining, but people who are making policy were listening, and you know, it was gratifying that it was making waves all the way out to Washington, D.C.
Yeah. So before we get into season two, Jimmy, can you tell us what exactly is Christian nationalism? We hear this term a lot, but really, what does it mean?
Well, there are so many different flavors within that broad term, but I think that the basic way that people can think about it is, in general, people with a Christian worldview, which takes the Bible generally literally, want to create a theocracy, which is a government run by Christians, with, you know, Christian dogma attached to its laws and regulations and all of those things. As I mentioned, I mean, there are several different offshoots and different ideas as to exactly what would go into that, how strict it would be, whether or not, and I'm sure we'll get into this, who can vote, whether, you know, non-Christians can vote, can women vote, can, you know, even different Christian subgroups vote in general. So it's a complicated term, and I think that sometimes it gets painted too broadly on people who aren't necessarily Christian nationalists.
I just wanted to jump in. Jimmy alluded to an important point, and I want people to know that when they're listening. You know, we're not here to paint all Christians as Christian nationalists, certainly not all devout Christians, because that is far from the truth. So, Jimmy alluded to that. You know, Christian nationalist is a very specific thing with folks who want to make Christianity basically the official religion of the government and the guiding force of the government, as opposed to just folks who are believers.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good point to make that difference so people understand that. So with that said, Heath, you and Jimmy decided to spend an entire year inside this Christian nationalist movement for season two. Why? Why did you decide you wanted to really dig in like that?
So one of the big motivators for me is that I saw that the movement was starting to matter a lot more. I think Christian nationalism had been a fairly fringe movement for a while, even though there were elements of it in some more mainstream parts of the right. But mm-hmm. in recent years, especially after the election of Donald Trump, it seemed like folks with these views, folks who really wanted America to be an explicitly Christian nation, were both getting more power, getting bigger soapboxes, and getting more influence in government. And on the flip side, there were people in government who were taking them more seriously, and even a few in Congress who were calling themselves Christian nationalists. So the short version of that is that I think they really started to matter, which is the same reason I started Extremely American, because a lot of these formerly fringe ideas were starting to matter more. And I think our timing right now is pretty important, because going into the 2024 election, if Donald Trump were to win, I think these folks would potentially have a lot more power and a lot more potential to implement mm-hmm. their ideas.
So I know the two of you focused a lot on Christchurch in Moscow. Jimmy, for folks who may not be familiar, tell us what Christchurch is.
Yeah, so this is a congregation, and depending on who you talk to, some don't recognize the former versions of it, but it's been around in some iterations since the 70s. And that's when Pastor Doug Wilson, who's the lead pastor at Christchurch, started preaching to, you know, mostly, I would say, married or young people attending U of I, University of Idaho, or had recently graduated from University of Idaho in Moscow. And it slowly grew on the Palouse over a few decades with, you know, little bits of fits and starts here and there of gaining lumps of membership at a time. But that mostly came more so, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, especially. And, you know, having been from Lewiston and growing up near the Palouse and attending U of I, it was kind of a presence while I was there for a long time. And I was always very interested in it. And that's what sort of pushed me to approaching Heath when he was looking for, you know, what to do with season two. And I'm like, hey, you know, this has been around for a long time, and they're slowly gaining influence. You know, they're slowly buying up more real estate, prominent real estate in downtown. And they also are just having this kind of explosion right now, you know, among national figures, either inviting prominent members to go on their talk shows, or, you know, selling homeschooling curriculum, or starting schools and planning churches. And, you know, it's just been exploding over the past, more so over the past 5 to 10 years, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So I know that the two of you spoke to a fellow named Gabe, and he says only Christians should hold public office under this Christian nationalist philosophy. So I want to play just a little bit of Extremely American season two and listen to this.
Hey, Gabe, how you doing?
Welcome. This is our...
I'm talking to Gabriel Wrench, a media personality and activist in Idaho. Most people call him Gabe.
Okay, great.
Gabe has a lot of ideas about how America should change.
You said it would probably take a long time, but that you would like to see only Christians be able to run for office. So if you're Jewish, if you're Muslim, if you're atheist, certainly. If I had you right, you said that, yes, you would support eventually them not being allowed to run for office.
That's correct. I did say that.
Because Gabe is a proud Christian nationalist.
I think that the Christian faith is the ideal moral doctrine and principles for a thriving society. And the farther you get away from that, the more in chaos we descend. And so the only way to maintain that, or one of the ways to maintain that, is you have to have people who are running for office who believe that. or you're going to get back into that chaotic decline.
So I'll tell you straight up, as a Jewish American, I hear that I can't run for office, other non-Christians can't, and I have to admit, it's a little terrifying to me, because to me, that means a fundamental freedom of mine in this theoretical world is gone.
Well, I mean, you're saying that in a country where you experience all these immense freedoms that was built on the Christian faith, so.
But where I can run for office right now.
Yeah, because your worldview is not good for society. But you're unique in the sense that your problem is you just refuse to believe that Jesus is Messiah. Where it's like you get a lot right, but you get the key thing wrong.
Wow. Heath. I mean, I am kind of flabbergasted. I mean, he said it out loud, basically saying your worldview is wrong. I am curious as to what else Gabe said to you as I take this in those last couple of minutes of what we just heard.
Right. It was a surreal year. As you said, you know, we were kind of inside the movement, and that's because everybody, basically, almost everybody talked to us, people like Gabe, which was really interesting because, to their credit, they said it pretty much exactly what was on their mind into our microphones. And if they were holding back, it'd be pretty interesting to see what else they were thinking, because they were very explicit, and including, as you heard, basically telling me, yeah, you wouldn't have full citizenship because of your beliefs. And it was at times it was extremely odd to have these conversations, because Gabe and pretty much everyone else was unfailingly polite. Even when they were telling me that I should have some of my fundamental rights stripped away from me. But the idea is that if you're not Christian, then in a Christian America, you wouldn't be fit to hold office. And some of them also think that you wouldn't be able to vote. So people gave different variations of that. But a lot of the folks I talked to said, if you're not Christian, then you shouldn't be able to run for office. You should have to be Christian to hold high office. Some of them said that you should be Christian to have to vote. And very importantly, for 50% of America, quite a few of them think women shouldn't be able to vote as well. So that was a common theme, that what you just heard was not some sort of out there fringe ideal within Christian nationalism. Mm-hmm. It's, how do I put this? It's mainstream within the movement.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting to me, because I am not surprised by the idea that within this movement, there are people that think that women shouldn't vote. I'm female, and I think that idea of women being second class citizens, it has been here my entire life and before I was ever on this planet. I think what has surprised me, Heath, in that last little bit that you shared with us with Gabe, is that, you know, we're getting down to this nitty gritty of faith. Like, even you have to be a certain type of faith, right? You have to believe a certain type of way, and that is that was surprising to me, I guess, and maybe I shouldn't be so surprised. But with that said, before we take a break, can you also tell us about this other core belief within the Christ Church? And this is, I believe, from the Christ Church leader, Doug Wilson. What's headship? What is this?
Yeah, headship's very important to them. And what headship means in a nutshell is that the husband is the leader of the family, that wives need to obey their husbands. And that more broadly, it really extends to men being in charge in general and being natural leaders, and women in general not being fit for leadership, whether that's in marriage, whether that's in business, whether that's in government. So what headship is, quite literally, is when a woman agrees to obey her husband, it means the husband is sort of the boss of the family. And yeah, that's something that is pretty accepted in Christchurch and mm-hmm. pretty accepted more broadly in Christian nationalism around the country. We spoke to a lot of folks who are outside of Idaho, and that was something that in that movement is not controversial. Obviously, it's extremely controversial outside of that movement, even in conservative circles. So yeah, in a nutshell, it's that men are in charge.
So talk a little bit about that, because there, as you said, even in conservative circles, there are some critics around this idea of headship, or like head of the household being solely a man.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are plenty of conservative women who are in charge, and we see that in Idaho, including in, frankly, folks on the far right. A lot mm-hmm. of women are leading that movement. So I think there's a lot of people in conservative circles, and we spoke to them in the podcast, who are critical of Doug Wilson, the leader of Christchurch, and critical of Christchurch in general, and some of the broader Christian nationalist movements. Where they stand on women's roles in society, that can be a pretty nuanced view, but there are a lot of people that think that women should absolutely have the opportunity to be in leadership positions. Mm-hmm. Certainly, they think they should be able to run for office. And a lot of people are offended by the idea that women should be second-class citizens. And that extends, you know, there's this whole debate going on right now within Christian nationalism and more conservative circles about the 19th Amendment. And mm-hmm. a lot of viewers or a lot of listeners will know that the 19th Amendment guaranteed women the right to vote. And it's something that seems very non-controversial in 2024. But let me tell you, if you go down the social media rabbit hole of Christian nationalists, there's a vigorous debate going on right now about whether the 19th Amendment should be repealed. And that is a real thing in 2024, which is kind of wild.
So let's take another listen to the second season of Extremely American.
We believe that Jesus is Lord. Christ is Lord. And a lot of churches have been willing to sort of subsume their faith under the big tent of America, right? We'll just take our little corner here and think our religious thoughts inside our head, inside this room. But we think it's public. We think the Christian faith is public. And I think that unsettles people.
Doug wants all of Moscow to believe what he believes. He wants to take it over and make it a Christian town. It says so right on Christchurch's website. Quote, "Our mission at Christchurch is summed up by the phrase, all of Christ for all of life. Under the grace of God, this means that our desire is to make Moscow a Christian town," end quote. To that end, Christchurch and its members have been making a concerted effort to increase their influence here. Doug characterizes it as improving the town.
We're not interested in any kind of top-down takeover or we're not interested in that kind of forceful or coercive takeover. But we are interested in evangelizing and preaching and seeing the churches grow. And we do want Moscow to become a Christian town, but we want it all to happen voluntarily by people moving here and being converted and bringing up their children here.
So, Jimmy, you mentioned you grew up in Lewiston. You went to school, University of Idaho, in Moscow. So you know that area pretty darn well. What did you find out about what Christchurch is doing there?
Yeah, so I mean, I looked through property records to kind of quantify just how much property and real estate Christchurch was owning in downtown Moscow, or, you know, its affiliates or mm-hmm. people within the church. And I found that pretty much about 20% of downtown is owned by either the church itself, New St. Andrews, which is the college associated with Christchurch, one of its church affiliates, or known church members. And for anyone who hasn't been to Moscow, basically think of like a 6-block area, 6 by 2 or 3 block area that you can walk in like 5 to 10 minutes from tip to tip. And there's kind of a weird north and south downtown dynamic going on, where Christchurch has mostly been focusing on real estate north of 3rd Street. You know, they bought the old CJ's building for people who know Moscow, old nightclub thing north of downtown. And they have converted that into a different church / New St. Andrews sort of music graduate studies program. Not to mention, I mean, several prominent buildings that we're talking tens of thousands of square feet, lots of rooms, both residential and business, you know, real estate holdings there. And it's just kind of surprising to me, because if you look at just how many members Christchurch and its affiliate have, we never really got like a solid answer there, but we think it was, what, Heath, maybe 1,200-1,500 in Christchurch itself. I don't know if that's spread out across yeah. all of their different affiliates in Moscow, but and you know, Moscow is a town of about, you know, 25,000-26,000 people, so relatively small subset, but they own about 20% of downtown. And that is, you know, a substantial number. Not to mention that if the church or New St. Andrews or a different nonprofit affiliate of the church owns a particular building, they don't pay property taxes on it because they're a nonprofit or a religious right. entity. And so none of the money that would normally go to the town to fix potholes or roads or, you know, go toward any other city programs, that's not there anymore because it's taken off the tax rolls. So it's pretty substantial, not to mention the new housing development that is set to go online here pretty soon, or in the next couple years, depending on when they actually develop out the lots. You know, that's, you know, several hundred different housing units there. For a town of 26,000 people, you know, Moscow real estate has been pretty tight for a long time. And, you know, this could either be a big site for potential new congregants to move in for Christchurch, or just, you know, people in general. It's not like they can keep out non-believers, right? But it's substantial, and we're talking lots of money being put into these deals, whether it's buying buildings or buying land.
So, Jimmy, what about locals and city leaders? I mean, is there any pushback to Christchurch?
There's been pushback for decades. I mean, you know, you go back to old city council meetings that we looked at, and you talk to people who were around back, especially in the 90s, when New St. Andrews, the college associated with Christchurch, sort of set up shop in downtown Moscow. And there's a whole kerfuffle about whether or not a college was allowed to be downtown. And eventually, I mean, they got the permit and they're allowed to be there. But there have been many, many hours of city council and planning and zoning meetings about this. Certainly people who, you know, are elected or just community leaders speaking out against Christchurch more broadly, especially for their, you know, pretty extreme views on headship and certainly slavery, which we haven't even gotten into yet. But there's been pushback for a very long time. Yes.
And Jimmy, my understanding is that Christchurch, there are Christian schools. They have Christian schools. I mean, you mentioned St. Anthony's. Do they have other schools besides that?
So yeah, they have New St. Andrews, again, the college downtown.
New St. Andrews.
Yeah, they have Logos, which is their K-12 school. And that is, they're actually just building a new campus for that right now. But otherwise, it was sort of in the northwest end of Moscow, kind of by Winco, if people know that area. And they have been, or at least Logos has been around since the 80s, really, starting in congregants, you know, kitchens and living rooms, and then eventually to a church basement. But then, of course, Logos expanded and blew up, and now you have a whole online division of Logos. So any kid in America can go on there if they pay tuition, not to mention a different affiliated publishing arm, which publishes homeschooling materials. And they have, from what Doug Wilson has told us, a pretty substantial piece of the market there too. So education is probably, you know, aside from church planting, it's either their first or second most successful venture, I would say.
And just Jimmy, to add on to that, they actually have 475 schools around the country now that are affiliated with Doug Wilson's sort of umbrella education group, and it represents 50,000 students. So it's really expanded well beyond Moscow. And as listeners will hear in the podcast, Doug Wilson thinks of these students as, he calls them human munitions, going out into the world to be kind of Christian soldiers to further his cause.
Is it fair to say, and Jimmy or Heath, either of you answer this, that the Christ Church is hoping that the city of Moscow becomes almost like a blueprint of to move forward with making the United States an explicitly Christian nation?
I mean, I would certainly say that they explicitly want Moscow to be a Christian town, and they explicitly want America to be a Christian nation. So it very much feels like Moscow is sort of the you know, the microcosm. I don't know that they explicitly would say that, you know, Moscow is the blueprint, but they're certainly trying to export their ideas to other people, and they have a blueprint for schools, which they've already successfully exported, as well as a blueprint for churches, which they see as much more than churches. You know, they see them as local cultural influencers. So, yes, what they're doing in Moscow, what they're trying to do in Moscow, they're also trying to do nationally. So, so yeah, I mean, it certainly is a blueprint for a broader goal.
I know that you also found that the church, Christ Church, looks out for its image, which I would say that majority of organized religions look out for its image. But this actually came out in one of your episodes, and it looks at abuse and survivors within the church. Can you talk a little bit about this and what you found out?
Yeah. So as we dug into Christ Church, what kept coming up was these cases of abuse and a lot of critics who said they were badly mishandled, if not covered up. And so you have several different cases. The most horrific one was there was a serial child molester named Stephen Sittler, who was abusing members of the church, kids, children of members of the church. And it was even more horrific in a way because he was a new St. Andrew student. So he was a student at the Christ Church College, and he was boarding with a family who was a Christ Church family, which is sort of the way they do things with their college students. They put them with Christian families in general. And yeah, he was abusing the kids there. So that case was the most prominent one. He did go to prison, although he didn't go very long, despite having a life sentence. And Doug Wilson wrote a letter on his behalf to the judge. That was the most horrific case, but there were several other cases, including one of a teacher allegedly preying on a student at the Christ Church school Logos. And we were able to talk to her. So one of the episodes is her story. And she very courageously has spoken out publicly about what happened to her. about her teacher grooming her for a relationship, for a sexual relationship. And this went on for years, according to the survivor. And and what she says basically, and what other survivors have said, is that Christchurch, when things like this happen, they look out for their own image, and they actually look out for the abusers if they're connected to Christchurch, and they don't really look out for the victims. What the survivors have said is that the victims sort of are an inconvenience for the church, if not sort of actively hostile. That's kind of how they say they've been treated. Now, obviously, Christchurch denies this. Doug Wilson denies this. He says he does not look out for abusers, and he says that, in fact, they've done everything they can to tamp that down, including firing the teacher that I mentioned, which they did eventually, who allegedly was grooming the student. But there's a quite a big chorus of critics, including survivors, who say there's a real dark underbelly of abuse at the church.
Mm-hmm. Heath and Jimmy, you two got very deep inside the Christian nationalist movement over the last year. I'm curious, from either of you, were you surprised that you were able to get in so deep? And also, how far inside did you get?
It's always kind of a crapshoot when you start these gigantic projects, especially mm-hmm. when it deals with such controversial topics like this. But I would say that Heath and I had multiple conversations, just kind of being shocked at how many people actually talked to us and were willing to talk to us and talk to us multiple times over the course of hours. I mean, I think we can certainly count on one hand the number of people who either didn't get back to us or didn't want to talk to us. And I think that it's closer to, two or three as opposed to five. So it was pretty shocking, at least from that perspective.
I guess, I'm sort of always surprised when people share their personal stories with me as a journalist, even like 20 years into this job. But in this case, it's a group that's so distrustful of media that mm-hmm. I thought that it would be a lot harder to get people to talk than it was. And I will say, I am grateful for the people who did talk to us, even though they probably don't trust the media. And I'm especially grateful to the survivors who talked to us and shared stories that are, I can't even, unimaginably difficult to tell, let alone to tell publicly. So yeah, I'm sort of shocked and gratified that all of these people did talk to us.
Jimmy, I'm going to start with you, but I want to ask both of you this question. How are you feeling about what you learned over this last year and going through this process?
I think that, it's a pretty eye-opening experience, whether it's a topic like Christian nationalism or militias from season one of Extremely American or any other long-term big project that I've worked on, where even going into it, even if you feel like you know the topic somewhat well or fairly well, there are always so many different surprises and turns and nuances that you never expected to learn. For example, just one thing that was pretty interesting about Christchurch in general is that, the pastors, unlike a whole lot of other evangelical churches and pastors, that they didn't really fully embrace Donald Trump. Pastor Doug Wilson, while he supported certainly some of Trump's policies, but they are very much pretty consistent on approving of policies, but not the person necessarily behind it. For example, he opposed the war in Iraq and Afghanistan in 2004, right, Heath? Which was a pretty,
yes,
controversial opinion, even among Democrats, back in the time. So, they aren't ones to shy away from controversial opinions, but they've been consistent in that realm. So that's particularly one piece that I thought was interesting to think about. So even if they embrace some of Trump's mantras and viewpoints, it's not like they are full-throated supporters of the man himself.
Mm-hmm. So Heath, what about you? How are you processing and feeling after a year inside this movement?
You know, one of the things I was sort of wondering when I started this was like, am I the right person to tell this story? And I think, you know, there's plenty of reasons why maybe there could be somebody else, but I came away from it thinking, actually, like, I think I have a great perspective on it because I'm not a devout Protestant Christian, but I'm one of the people who would lose out potentially in a Christian America. And, you know, so would my daughter potentially, like, mm-hmm. When they started talking about the rights that non-Christians would lose, I'm like, oh, that's me. And so how am I feeling? I mean, I'm really glad we did this project because I think it's actually more important than I even realized when I started, because the kind of America that they want would be so radically different than what we know. And it would essentially mm-hmm. end democracy as we know it, because it's not a democracy in the way that we have it now, because so many people would be either disenfranchised or their rights would be changed because of their beliefs, which is obviously anathema to what we currently have. So my feeling is that it's very important. And if you think that non-Christians should be full citizens, then you should probably pay really close attention to this movement, because even though they don't have power at the moment, or at least not full power, things are changing fast, and I think they could gain a lot more.
Before I let you go, do we have an air date for the podcast?
Yes. So right now, you can look for the first two episodes dropping on June 26th, and then it'll be weekly after that.
Okay. And then how do people get it? Is it just anywhere they listen to podcasts, I'm assuming?
Yes. So you can definitely go to BoiseStatePublicRadio.org, obviously, or anywhere you get podcasts.
Well, I want to thank both of you for giving us a preview of this second season. Really, I think, interesting conversation, but necessary conversations to be having. So thank you for all of the work the two of you have done over the last year on this. Really appreciate both of your time.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thanks.
We've been speaking with reporters Heath Drusen and James Dawson about the second season of the Extremely American podcast, which drops later this month. Find out more on our website, BoiseStatePublicRadio.org. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.